Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. Today, we have a good conversation coming to you guys. This is an episode of our Triangle Offense series, meaning there are three people on this podcast. So our first one to introduce here is sitting across from me here at our headquarters, and that is PSB co-founder Logan Kosmalski. Welcome back to the podcast, my man.
Thank you, Christian.
It's good to have good you here. Yeah, and so on the phone, Logan, we have a very special guest, first-time guest on the podcast who we have come in contact with through the Junior NBA. And she goes by the coach's coach and communications specialist, and that is Betsy Butterick on the call. How are you doing, Betsy? Good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm doing well, guys. Nice to meet both of you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are so excited to have you here today, and just going to have a really good conversation about what you do and kind of how we can use your knowledge to move forward to not only our coaches within Pro Skills, but any of our listeners out there who can take bits and pieces of knowledge away from this. So I'm going to pass it over to Logan, and he's going to jump into some backstory about how we got to know you, how we got you on the podcast, and let's hop right into this conversation.
Absolutely. It all started, Christian, about a year ago, seeing Betsy at a Junior MBA conference where she did we had a little breakout sessions, and she did about an hour-long presentation. Betsy, I don't know if you remember, but they cut you way short. I think you could have gone for two more hours. You had the audience right where you wanted. And, but just stepping away from that, from watching Betsy do her presentation, just a wealth of knowledge, and people were excited leaving. A Corinthius that works in our office here with us, we left that and we were just blown away by how applicable it was to what we were trying to do, and everything that we learned was just hit home for us. So super excited to have Betsy on the podcast, and I guess I just want to start, Betsy. Have we done a good enough job kind of explaining what you do? I mean, can you expand a little bit on your background and what your line of work really entails?
Absolutely. And I think you did a great introduction. My background is in athletics. So I was in women's basketball for 10 years. I started at Stanford University. I was with the Seattle Storm in the WNBA for a year after that. Then a year at the University of Washington. And then 4 years at Occidental College in LA. And then 3 at UC San Diego. And I stepped off the court in 2015 to do what I do now, which is work full-time as the coach's coach and communication specialist, mainly with athletic departments and teams, helping people become more intentional about their communication, knowing that words are never just words, right? They're tools. And especially as coaches, we can't play for our student-athletes. I know many of us would like to, but we can't play for our student-athletes. The greatest control we have over the game, and more specifically over the experience we provide, is with our language. So learning to be more intentional about our language so that we can increase the quality of the student-athlete experience and be more effective at what we do as coaches.
Betsy, do you remember a light bulb moment when you were coaching and all of a sudden you realized, like, I've got to get out of this coaching line of work and get into what you're doing now?
I do. It was very distinctive. I was, I believe it was 2010. I was at Occidental College working with head coach Heidi Vandeveer. Heidi and I worked together for 7 of the 10 years.
Beautiful school, by the way. Beautiful campus.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Little Eagle Rock, California, just nestled in near Pasadena. Right. So I was at Oxy, and we had taken a trip to the Bay Area for a tournament. Our athletic director at the time had come with us. And I remember getting a voicemail on my phone after one of our games, and it said, Betsy, if Heidi says it's okay, I want you to take the van, drive up to San Francisco. There's someone that I want you to meet. So I go up to San Francisco. It's a dark, rainy, iconic San Francisco night. And I pull up to this dimly lit whiskey bar. And in the back is my athletic director sitting at a table with another woman. And all she said was, Betsy, this is Sue. Sue coaches leaders. I think you have a lot to talk about. And it was that moment where I first realized that coaching was something that existed outside of sport. And as soon as I realized that that was a thing, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the thing that I feel most called to do. This is the thing that I can't not do. And I ended up finding a school in San Francisco called New Ventures West. And I did a year-long immersive program to earn what's called an integral coaching certificate, which is simply a fancy word for saying we look at things from a whole person perspective. So if you've got an issue at work, I'm going to look at it from how it affects you at work, but also how it affects your day-to-day everywhere else that you go. So that was, I think that was the transitional moment where I realized there was something else that I wanted to do. I loved coaching. And the joke between Heidi and I was that I liked basketball, but I loved people. I was never that, you know, X's and O's, grind, 24/7. If I'm not coaching, I'm watching basketball. I was never that person. And I admittedly felt a little bad about that. I felt like, man, if I was really going to be a great coach, there were other things that I needed to do. And what I learned is that it was the people aspect. And coaching until that time had been a way for me to be with people in what I felt like was a meaningful and transformative way, especially when we're talking about college age student athletes. And then once I learned that coaching people was a thing, I knew that I wanted to use that skill to serve people in the coaching profession. So that's really how I became the coach's coach. And the next 4 years, I was coaching coaches while still coaching basketball. And in 2015, reached a decision point where I felt like I wasn't giving my best to either anymore. And then that's when I made the decision to hang up the whistle.
Wow. Yeah. Betsy, it's awesome and very interesting to hear about your background when you were saying the dimly lit bar. A picture was being painted in my mind. So clearly your communication skills have been worked on and perfected to this point.
Thank you.
Who are you working with? I've heard you mention student athletes multiple times, right. But like what are some of your clientele?
Oh gosh. I typically work in one of three ways. The three ways typically are speaking at conferences, like when I met you all at the Junior MBA conference. Mm-hmm. So lots of leadership conference, keynote speaking, women's summit type of conferences, national sporting conventions. I was just at the soccer convention in Baltimore earlier this year. So that's one area where I do a lot of presentations. Mm-hmm. The other two are specifically with either athletic departments or individual teams. So recently I was at Wichita State and I did a presentation on relating to today's student athlete, the nuances of, you know, Gen Z and the way that they were raised with technology. We know that, quote, kids these days are different, and yet understanding in a more intentional way how being raised in a technological age has shaped the way that they've grown up, and how can we as coaches born in a different generation more effectively engage with them to build relationship and create a better outcome?
Betsy, can you expand on that a little bit? Like, kind of dive into the Gen Z and the technology aspect, and what are some of the trends or patterns that you're seeing as far as communication goes with the younger generation?
Absolutely. And it's an interesting, I'll say it's an interesting thing, because so often the complaints I'll hear from coaches are kids these days, and then you fill in the blank. And this is actually how I start this workshop, is I ask everyone, I say in half a sentence or two words, I would like everyone to complete this sentence, kids these days, and then I leave it. And as we go around the room, let's say there's 50, 60 people in the room, what comes up most often is some semblance of kids these days are lazy. Kids these days can't take criticism. Kids these days don't have any accountability. And it's negative, 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 negative. And I do this to set the stage with, yes, kids these days are different. And it's a heck of a lot easier for us as coaches to shift and change and grow to meet the challenges of Gen Z than it is to ask an entire generation to change. So in short, Gen Z is classified as being born right around or after 1996. And these young people that we're coaching have never known life without the internet. So this iGen has been dubbed the first true digital natives, and they've learned to operate some form of technology before they can form complete sentences. So the things that we hear, you know, so much texting, it's crazy. They text each other when they're in the same room. And things like there's this constant need for reassurance and validation. All these complaints from coaches, when really what's needed and what I aim to do in the presentation is allow us to understand the ways in which Gen Z is different and then build the bridge to how we can more effectively coach them given those challenges. So there's eight challenges that I cover, and they are related to the facts about Gen Z. So statistically, I think it's 52% of Gen Z cite honesty as the most important quality in leadership. And this is because this generation was raised in a post 9/11 world. So they were raised in an age, unfortunately, of school shootings and terrorism and global recession and climate change. And as a result, Gen Z is overwhelmingly more realistic than optimistic, which is what you found more with the Gen Xers. So similarly, and this is a crazy statistic, 79% of Gen Z displays symptoms of emotional distress when kept from their personal electronic devices. So you think about how long they have their devices with them and on. routinely Gen Z is multitasking across 5 screens. And 55%, over half of Generation Z, spends more than 5 hours per day on their mobile device, which is twice as long as the average college practice. So not only are they stressed when they can't use their devices, but they're spending twice as long as they spend in practice on those devices, and not just one screen, but multiple screens. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that happens. The challenges specifically, 8 seconds is roughly the attention span of Generation Z. And our challenge is to communicate in short bursts while making the learning process visual at every opportunity. This generation is highly visual in terms of how they like to learn. Another challenge is that Gen Z consumes bite-sized chunks of information. So at an incredible rate, but our challenge is to stick to facts and stats and summaries. If a member of Gen Z does a Google search per se, and they click on the first source that comes up, if they don't find what they're looking for in about 6 seconds, they'll jump back and switch sources. So they're accustomed, because of technology, to digesting data at an incredible rate, but they skim read. So we have to challenge, our challenge as coaches is sticking to facts and stats and summaries and key points, especially in written communications. Mm. Again, they're chat-based. So chat-based is their preferred form of communication. And our challenge as coaches is to operate in their conversational comfort zone while starting to provide opportunities for them to engage in longer form written and verbal communications. And we can use technology to do this. This generation loves to co-create, and we tend to see them with their devices as autonomous and independent. They love to collaborate. So they're highly educated, industrious, and collaborative. So our challenge as coaches is to look for and identify opportunities to co-create with them. This generation loves customization. So how can we allow them to customize their sport experience through having some sort of agency in the process? And getting back to that data-driven piece, they sift to find the most relevant data as it applies to their now. So our challenge is to make things immediately relevant. For coaches, that means leading with the why and our ability to illustrate the current value of what we're doing in relation to a larger purpose. Feedback is something that I hear or get pushed back on often. So Generation Z values honest, immediate feedback, which is countered with coaches routinely saying they can't accept criticism. The interesting part is that the studies have shown that that feedback is most valued, or they're most open and receptive to that feedback, while it's delivered in a calm, caring, and encouraging way. It does not mean that we need to be soft on this generation. What's being asked for here is that we elevate our conversational skills to coach them in a different way. And we'll see this countrywide. There's a shift happening from what was known as transactional coaching. I will give you a scholarship, you will come and perform services at a high skill level for my team, to transformational coaching, where we're really investing in the individual, allowing them to maximize their individual potential in the realm of sport, but in a less transactional, you will do this because I've done this kind of manner, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Betsy, first of all, wow. I feel like I'm so much more enlightened over the last 5 minutes of my life. And let me make something very interesting for you here, Betsy. I was born in 1997.
Cool.
So I make the cut of Gen Z.
And all the negative things you just mentioned, Betsy.
Totally true.
So I make the cut for Gen Z, and I think you were spot on so much of that. And I'm getting into coaching now here at ProSkills.
Okay.
And I think I one of my best qualities as a coach is my ability to relate to a younger generation and understand them. And I know you were talking about the importance of meeting them at their customization or working together or short, small bursts of information and giving them the why. I would love to hear you maybe lock in on one or two of, for our audience out there to take away from this, like what are one or two of the major keys that you notice that are easy ways for coaches to connect with younger generation, whatever the generation is below Gen Z, I'm not sure of that, but like how can our coaches begin to connect with them? Do you have any actionable ways that they can, put into their practice next week if they listen to this?
For sure. And I appreciate you asking. And I would start with, if there's one thing to keep in mind, and I ask every coach that I talk with about Gen Z to start with this, is it's not impossible. It's simply unpracticed. I think often as members of a different generation, we are so quick to judge Gen Z student athletes on what they can and can't do without realizing that because of the way they were raised with technology, they simply have not had the same opportunities to grow in certain skill areas that we did. Mm-hmm. So it's not impossible, it's unpracticed. And then our job as educators becomes, okay, how do we provide opportunities for them to start to practice these skills in a way that we know they're going to need moving forward? So let's start with, let's go with attention span. So that 8-second attention span, which technically is a little bit less than that of a goldfish. Goldfish comes in at 8.2. So
oh, man.
I had one coach right, following.
It's a rough podcast.
Again, this is not your fault. Yeah. Technology is the issue here. I had one coach write an email to me after, and he said, he signed it, yours in goldfish. And he's just thinking of his team as like swimming around this goldfish bowl. Mm. But one thing we can do when we talk about attention span, right? So if, let's say, it's the three of us, we're staff, right? One easy thing that you can do is ping pong your speakers. So I might say, okay, we're going to be working on this drill for the first part of practice. The reason that we're working on this, again, leading with the why, which goes back to that purpose statement. So I'm going to say what the drill is and what we're going to do and why we're going to do it. And then I'm going to kick it over to Logan, and Logan's going to start to explain how the drill is going to go. And then Logan's going to kick it over to you, Christian. So when you change speakers, you recapture attention. Mm. That's an easy way to get and hold attention. Anytime you can use someone's name, as soon as we say their name, they're primed to pay attention. So simply dropping people's names into conversation. So if we're talking about Gen Z and Christian, you have a question that you want to ask and Logan and I can't answer it because every time I say your name, you perk up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to do once you get in the practice of it. Another thing that you can do, and I loved coaching this way, was using the Socratic method, which Socrates was known famously for questioning his pupils into discovery and into learning. We can do the same thing as coaches. Rather than tell them, and I think this is a trap we fall into often as coaches, it's so easy for us to say versus ask. Mm. Asking can take a little more time, but it's stickier learning. So if I tell you, you need to go here versus asking you, if the defense is here, where would it benefit you to be? Small ways that we can ask questions that allow them to be more engaged in the learning process and also lets them tell us. I see coaches talk on and on and on, and their student athletes are either like, dude, we get it. You don't need to say it 5 times. Mm-hmm. Or they're nodding their head, but they have no comprehension, and they're just hoping for the best or that they can watch a teammate do it before they're asked to step into a drill. When you ask them to tell us as coaches, now you get a much better read on their comprehension level in real time, and then you can fill in the gaps as needed. So those are some examples as far as attention span.
Very cool. Betsy, I have a question.
Yeah.
As you've gone out, so you're the coach's coach, you go out and you talk to a basketball coach and athletic directors. Have there ever been instances that come to your mind off the top of your head, I went in and I learned something from this coach that I now put into practice with what I teach other coaches? So you come with all the knowledge, but I'm so curious as to, I went into this school and did my thing, and I learned this from this coach, and it blew me away.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, one of the big perks of my job. And I'll preface this with saying, I think where I see coaches get into trouble often, especially coaches that have been in it a long time, regardless of sport, and this goes for any profession, I would argue, when we think we know it all, that's when we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. The most dangerous place to be is a place of certainty, because it narrows our vision and we stop allowing or being open to new kinds of learning. One of the best parts of my jobs is being able to go to different programs and to different athletic departments and learn from the people that are there. I'll give you a few examples. I was working with San Diego State, and one of their coaches, their water polo coach, Erin is her name, and she said, I love to tell, we were talking about failure and adversity, and she said, I've adopted this phrase that I really like that has worked well with our student athletes, which is when they don't do the right thing or they fail, to say something along the lines of, it looks like you're making the right mistakes. Hmm. And there's power in that phrase because, yes, we're acknowledging you've made a mistake. There's an error in your performance or execution of a skill, but there's a difference between making a mistake and making the right mistake. When we're making mistakes that facilitate learning, when we're making mistakes because we're trying to execute a skill that we're working towards at a different level or a different pace, those are the right kind of mistake. I love that phraseology. there, I was just with Iowa Women's Field Hockey, and that's really the third way that I work. If I'm not talking to an athletic department and I'm going up, what's today, Thursday? So Monday, I'll be at UCLA speaking to their entire athletic administration staff and coaches in one session. And then we're doing a breakout, coaches only, and then a separate breakout, staff and admin only. But I learn something every time I go somewhere. And Sue Enquist has become a friend and mentor of mine, obviously longtime coach at UCLA. She invited me back, this was last month, to speak at the Graduate School of Education, because UCLA now has a master's in transformative coaching and leadership. And I learned from Sue, one of the things I learned from Sue was this idea of catch them doing it right. And that was something that she was intentional about. We make corrections and we're so quick to open our mouths as coaches when we see something that's not working or something that needs to change. The best programs consistently have coaches that use their voices to do exactly what Sue said, catch them doing it right. Mm-hmm. Everywhere I go, I learn something, even if it's a question. I love when people ask questions that I don't know the answer to. And I'll be the first to admit that I don't know. And I'll usually follow it up with, it's really interesting. Tell me more. Like, can you teach me? So I get to accumulate, not only from my background, things that I've learned while I was coaching, things that my student athletes have taught me, things I learned from other coaches, but I continually am exposed to different coaching styles and, you know, sports and longevity and experience in coaching that enables me to take best practices and then feed those back to the individuals that I'm working with, whether it's an athletic department or a team.
Betsy, you just reminded me of something that it's kind of been a focus of ours for the past couple of years, when you said catch them doing something right, and you've gone really deep into analyzing Gen Z and why they do the things that they do. I'm curious as to, so I'm going to go back in my story a little bit and say, we've always tried to get our coaches to say, and I've always questioned to our coaches, why is it that we have this coaching mentality of, I'm going to be really, when things go wrong, I'm going to be really angry, really emotional. I'm going to be overly emphatic. But when things go right, I'm just going to say a simple good job and a simple pat on the back. So, and I've always encouraged our coaches, let's flip that on its head. Let's, hey, when things go wrong, let's approach it with a little bit of, you know, low plate emotions. Like let's address the issue. But let's also celebrate when things go right. Let's show some emotion when things are good, when things are happy. And so I'm kind of curious is if you can sort of explain to me, like you did with Gen Z, why is it in Gen X and older, what brought on this mentality of we cannot, you know, it's got to be rough, it's got to be hard, it's got to be militaristic and authoritarian, and kind of what brought that on, do you think?
Mm-hmm. And that's a great point. And it's true. I think we've learned over time, and I will give Gen Z credit for maybe accelerating the timeline, but you see countrywide, and when you're talking about specifically college athletics, are a few things have converged to make this a more spotlight issue than it was in the past. For years, especially, and I don't want to single out men, because there are absolutely women that have adopted that coaching style and for whom it's been very successful. You could argue Pat Summitt had a very authoritative style. I mean, she had that steely glare, and she's one of the best coaches to ever coach the game. And her players loved her. Like, that was, I think, something that, you know, we see like Pat Flair, and we see the ways that she was authoritative, and only those that were part of the program or close to Pat truly know what a caring individual she was, because for most people, perception is reality, right? Mm-hmm. And there were coaches that were successful in that for a long time. And I think that bred another generation of coaches that wanted to do that. What's happened recently in the last 10 years or so with the rise of the importance of mental health and the rise of student athlete complaints, again, tied with technology. When I was growing up, my parents couldn't email a coach. You couldn't take to Twitter and vent about your feelings. There was limited points of access. With increased access points, part because of technology, coaches have had to be more responsive than ever to the desires of today's student athlete, to the way that they want to be coached. That and the rise of knowledge and I'll say adoption of all of the data that we know from positive psychology. You simply get a better result, a higher quality result over time when you have a positive environment versus a negative environment. When you coach from a place of support instead of demand, And we talk about this in the championship communication workshop I do. It's called Rephrasing the Positive. And I'll ask a team, and they love doing this. I'll say, you've got 60 seconds in your different groups. I want you to write down all the phrases that your coaches say that start with "don't" or "stop." What are all the negative phrases that your coaches say? And they'll go off, and they have fun doing it. And then I'll pause them and say, okay, I want you to rephrase those in the positive. And then they have to rephrase those without using the words "don't" or "stop." The point here is that when we tell people what we want them to do instead of what we don't want them to do, we're more likely to get the result that we're looking for. And we create a more positive environment simply by changing our words, by using our language. I can't tell you how many times I'll sit at a practice and I hear, you know, coaches say, "Don't stop playing. Don't foul." And it's like, okay, what do you really want to see?
I think somebody used that example of like, yeah, don't foul. Don't foul a three-pointer. Yes. Don't foul a three-pointer. And they go out and foul.
And then it happens. And we talked about it when you were with me in Chicago, but what happens on a subconscious level, our brain doesn't process negatives in the same way that we understand them when we speak them. So we speak them with the intention of "do not do this thing." A negative subconsciously acts as a little blip on the radar. It's something that's out of context, and our brain pays more attention to what comes next. So when you hear that "don't foul," our student athletes will sit in front of us and time out and nod and be like, "yeah, don't foul. And in their brain, they're like, boop, fell. And the brain's really smart. So when they go out and do that, we can't exactly blame them. That's our fault, you know? But it's these little things like this. And again, there's so many, and I think this is what makes me so passionate about communication as a specialty, is it's a controllable something, right? There's no limit or ceiling to how much we can learn and know about communication and the ways in which we can put words together to create a new reality or a better outcome or a different environment for our student athletes and for everybody. Improving your communication benefits you in all areas of your life. It's not like, oh, well, now you're a great coach, but you kind of suck as a spouse. You know? Like, this crosses every line. I had a participant after one workshop. And the question she asked at the end, and I think I covered this, but if not, I'll do it now. I'll typically close a workshop by saying, or asking the audience, when your coach finishes teaching you a new drill, or you see any speaker finish a presentation, what's a question that they often ask at the end? And it'll typically come back, "Are there any questions?" I said, "Great. What's the difference if instead of saying, 'Are there questions?' instead I said, 'What questions do you have?' What changed between those two?" So I'll put it out to you. What are the difference? What difference do you notice between "are there any questions" versus "what questions do you have"?
What questions do you have feels more inviting. I'm not sure why. It feels slightly more engaging. It feels more, what questions do you have? There's some individualism there, or kind of attaching my identity to it as opposed to just general, "are there any questions?"
Great. And what you're naming, what you're getting at, are essentially barriers to communication. Are there any questions? Nothing inherently wrong with that question. And there's two barriers that an individual has to overcome. First, they have to admit that there's something they didn't understand. And second, they have to have the courage to ask it. When you said, "what questions do you have" feels more inviting, it's because we've removed that first barrier. So instead of someone having to admit there's something they didn't understand, we are signaling to them, "I'm sure there's something that didn't make sense here or that wasn't clear." And we've created the space that invites them to ask their question, that thing that's on their mind. So again, these are small things that we can do with little shifts in language. When you talk about that the shift in how we're coaching and how we're being most effective, one of the things that I loved about coaching with Heidi, and I always give her credit for this at every opportunity, is we worked together 4 years at Occidental College, 3 at UC San Diego. She's still at UC San Diego. They went 30-1 last year. I mean, she's absolutely a basketball genius. Mm-hmm. And what I love most about coaching with Heidi is we won 5 championships in 7 years at 2 different divisions, and we never talked about winning. We only ever spoke about opportunities for success, because those are the things that you can control. What do we need to do to give ourselves the greatest opportunity for success? That was supported every year by, as a staff, our commitment was to making sure that our student athletes felt seen, valued, and appreciated regardless of skill level.
Yeah.
And what happens when you take that time, like when you make people feel seen, valued, and appreciated, it doesn't matter if it's in sport or any other facet of life, those people that feel seen, valued, and appreciated tend to be happy. Happy people tend to give you their best. Mm-hmm. When you have an entire team of people giving you their best, you tend to win a lot of games. So it's a super simple recipe, and yet I haven't found anything more powerful as far as transforming the sport of experience into a really positive experience, both for coaches and student athletes.
Betsy, you're spending a lot of time talking about the positive, and you mentioned it before, the positive psychology and making people feel appreciated. What are some things that you do? Because I have to imagine that you go into a school and you meet with, let's say, a coach who does not identify with these things that you're talking about, right?
Sure.
How do you get over that hurdle of convincing somebody, like, I know this is what you're used to, I know this is what you think coaches are supposed to do, but you need to focus on being positive because of this? How do you change somebody's mind?
Good question. They're out there. And I'll say my role is never to change someone's mind. And I'll, you know, people ask routinely, so as the coach's coach, what do you tell other people how to coach? I'll never tell you how to coach, but if you are curious and want to, I can likely help you become a better one. When I run into an individual like that, and this happened recently, it happened to be a men's basketball coach, and it was a colleague of his that said, you know, I really respect this guy because he doesn't placate to what this generation needs. He's really clear with, I'm going to make men out of boys. And if you decide to come here, it's going to be my way or the highway. I said, okay, great. What I like about what that coach has done there is he's clarifying expectations. So you can choose as a coach, as the leader of your program, to coach in any way that you feel is most beneficial. Ideally, I would like it to be beneficial not just for you, but for the student athletes and their health and well-being and skill development. You can choose to coach any way that you want to. What I ask individuals to do is to be intentional about the way that they're coaching and why they're coaching that way. So if, let's say, with that individual, he's going to make men out of boys, as long as he is communicating that expectation and exactly what that looks like to the student athletes that he's recruiting, and that's what they sign up for, okay. Do I agree with it as the best, most effective way? No. But what I'm responsible to do is to ask someone, okay, if you're going to coach this way, why are you coaching this way? And is it getting the results that you want to get in the best way for everyone?
I think that's a super powerful question, Betsy. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. What you just asked, like, why are you coaching this way? I don't think a lot of people take the time to think about what triggers their behavior and why they're doing the things they're doing, besides the fact that this is what I know, this is the way that I was coached, and this is the only thing that I know. I was conditioned to coach this way, but I think that's the initial starting point, is why do you coach this? Why do you believe it? Why do you behave in this manner?
It is, and the interesting, I mean, the dialogue goes a variety of ways from there, but I'll ask an individual in this context, if they say, well, that's how I was coached and it really worked for me, which casually is a terrible answer because, like, we cannot realistically expect to coach today's student athlete the way that we were coached. It was a different time, it was a different world, but also if we are asking or expecting that let's say it's a basketball team, 16 to 20 individuals on our team are little versions of us, we're not doing them justice.
Yeah.
Like, please, let's start by seeing these individuals as just that, as individuals. But when we go down this path, and again, most of coaching happens through questions. The most effective coaching is done through inquiry and connection. When a coach says, well, you know, this is what's worked for me, or this is what I know, this is what I'm comfortable with. Again, it's not my job to dictate right or wrong. It's question them into a place of curiosity where they're able to self-reflect enough to ask themselves, is this how I want to continue? Is this most effective? So I might then go towards, you know, tell me about your upcoming goals for the season. And then they go down that path. And I say, okay, so if you want your student athletes to be, and I use their own words, tell me how, again, their self-reflection of their coaching style yields that outcome. Is this the best way to get that result? If that wasn't the best way, what else might you consider? What haven't you tried? I mean, we can go a variety of ways, but my job is really to open up new perspectives and possibilities to allow an individual greater choices than they had before. I mean, that's really my job as the coach's coach, is to bring fresh eyes to a situation and allow individual coaches to explore opportunities or options they may not have been aware that they have. At the end of the day, they make those choices. Mm-hmm. It's simply my job to reflect.
Yeah. Betsy, I mean, I got to tell you, like, I love this stuff. I love, I mean, I feel like I can't write down notes fast enough over here to keep track of what you're talking about.
Hopefully somebody's recording.
Hopefully we're getting this. But I think, you know, to wrap this up, I want to go back to how this conversation started, how I got to know you, is that junior MBA conference and seeing you in your workshop. And there, you recommended a book that I just finished called Crucial Conversations. Absolutely amazing book. So enlightening. And so I wonder, as we kind of wrap this conversation up, what are some other resources out there? And you told me over emails as we were getting together, you had another book recommendation for me, so I can't wait to hear about that.
I do.
But what are some other recommendations where people want to expand on what they're hearing you say? Where can they go? I would highly encourage them to consider hiring you and bringing you out to wherever you could possibly go. But on the flip side, if they can't do that, what are some books, what are some areas of or resources you would recommend?
Absolutely. There's so many. And I love books. Books are friends. I've got so many shelves, and it's nice to have a library that I feel like I can pull from different situations. Crucial Conversations, I'm so glad you read it. That's the one that it's my go-to recommendation for people to get better at having difficult conversations. And I do an entire workshop and a webinar series on confrontation for connection. How do we have these difficult conversations in a way that builds trust and relationship? Because it's a skill. And because it's a skill, it's something we can work on. Most of us find ourselves in those types of conversations without ever having been taught how to do them well, or we've had a bad experience or multiple bad experiences, so we fear and avoid them. So that's a great book, and I'm so glad that you read that one. The one that I was going to recommend to you that we were talking about via email.
I'm excited.
It's called Fierce Conversations by Susan Scott. And she also, I think she has a TED Talk as well, but I love that book because there's so many quotes in it. There's so many stories in it. It's very, whereas Crucial Conversations I value for the extensive research and the way that it's presented as actual, Fierce Conversations I value from kind of more of that whole person perspective of it's very easy to read. It makes a lot of sense. It's enjoyable to read. And yet it gives you, same thing, actionable tools for how can we start to fiercely engage in difficult conversations from a place of curiosity. That's something that I really, really liked about Fierce Conversations is there's such an emphasis on interrogating reality and coming from that curious place. When we're curious about things instead of defensive about things, we can have different conversations. And the whole premise of the book is built on this quote, and I believe the company Fierce, which is based out of Seattle, this is their mission statement essentially, is no single conversation is guaranteed to change the trajectory of a life or a career, yet any conversation can. And I love that sentiment. And if we enter into every conversation that we have, even casual conversations, holding that in mind, that no conversation is guaranteed to change the trajectory of anything, but that any conversation can, that's coming into a conversation with empty hands and seeing what comes up and being present. And I love that. So Fierce Conversations, absolutely a must read. Other ones I love, Trust Factor by Paul Zak. Paul is the leading researcher for the relationship between oxytocin and trust. His lab is at Claremont Graduate University. I'm a graduate of Claremont McKenna, so I was able to connect with Paul via that route, but love his book as far as clearly explaining the way that we can build trust and relationship intentionally within our organizations. In the book, he uses a lot of corporate examples. Every company that he talks about, you could absolutely take those same learnings and apply them to a non-corporate team, so an athletics team at any level. In addition, I think they call it Monday Memos, but the premise being if you were to read this book, say, over the weekend, and it's possible to do that, you could walk in on Monday morning and start doing these intentional things that would allow you to build trust within your team. So I love it for that reason. I also really like Emotional Agility by Susan David. Emotional agility gets into how we think about feelings and emotions, the way that those are different, how we can better understand them and use them for good instead of letting them kind of take over and maybe leading us down a path that we may not otherwise want to go. But just this idea of being emotionally agile, not only with our own emotions, but through the quality of empathy, how do we deal with the emotions of other people as well? So book-wise, those are some of my favorites. I also, at the end, it was right December 31st, so right at the end of last year, I released my first digital course. And if you go to the website, you can link to it, but it's called Winning with Words Championship Communication for Coaches. And I believe it's 108 videos plus associated worksheets. If you were to watch all the videos end to end, it's 3.5 hours of content with the worksheets. That allows you to take some of the tools that are presented in the videos and then apply them to your team or whatever sporting context you happen to be in. But that's the thing I'm most excited about now is I don't have to, although I love to, I don't have to now go and speak in front of a group in order to be able to help an individual coach. It's online, it's self-paced. You buy it once, you have it for an entire year. And coaches, the feedback I've gotten as far as the small actionable things that would take me a long time to teach someone, either through individual coaching or several workshops, now they have at their fingertips whenever they need it. And it's been such a rewarding experience.
Yeah, Betsy, first of all, I just want to say I appreciate you so much coming on this podcast and giving us so much knowledge. I know Logan and I were both going into this very excited about this conversation as we're both very much growth mindset people. And we have an organization here that's very much built off that. And everything you've been saying has been along this, you know, come into conversation with empty hands and ask why and want to be a learner. So I just appreciate you coming on here and giving knowledge to anyone out there listening who's listening with open hands. So it's been a real pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to share. Anybody can start. And you know, you want to start being a better communicator? Great. Start today. Start with intention. There's so many things that we can do. The last resource that I do need to mention would be the ACT videos. If you go on YouTube and search my name, Betsy Butterick, there's 29 ACT videos. ACT stands for Active Communication Technique. All the videos are roughly 2 minutes or less, and they're designed to be something anyone can do today to impact the way that they communicate and connect with others. So those are your quick hits. If you want to start there, start with anyone and try it. We're going to learn by trying and doing, but everyone has the ability to become a better communicator. And I thank you guys for the opportunity to share and to help hopefully those that are listening start on that journey for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I certainly hope this is not our last conversation.
Likewise.
Hopefully we can check in with you again soon. Well, that's Betsy Butterick on the phone. She is the coach's coach and communication specialist. Thank you again, Betsy. Logan, thanks for joining me on the podcast. All of our listeners out there, please go check in on all of the just great nuggets of information that Betsy dropped and all of the additional things she told us to go watch. And I plan on going and checking at least one of those YouTube videos out today to see what I can get from it. So to all of our listeners out there, please follow us on our social media channels at ProSkills Basketball on Twitter at ProSkills B-Ball, and we will be bringing you more content soon. Thank you.